The smartest guys around are about to break it down like they've won the game a million times.
Well, actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor know-it-alls.
Yes, that's right. The Australian Survivor Know-It-Alls are back once again. Steven, tell me about the ecstasy that must have felt when you made the merge the first time in Survivor Cambodia.
Oh, my God. I think I made three merges in Survivor Cambodia. That's how dateable I am. I made the merge so three times in Survivor Cambodia, according to this. Let's call everything a merge. Let's call everything. No. I just tweeted it, Rob, and I'm really proud of this joke, but it's just an effing swap.
Yes, just a swap. There is a difference between making the merge and making a merge. It's
no, this
different.
Is not even a merge. This is a swap. This is, you know, we've been doing this on American Survivor a long time. You know, every time three tribes have gone down to two, which has happened a couple of times, it's been called a swap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, or something like that. Yeah. But
or
not,
something.
But not merge.
Not a merge. The merge is one thing. I love Magic Matt. Magic Matt's one of my favorites this season. But when he was talking about how great it was to make the merge.
Yeah, that was one of his things on his bucket list. No. At best, you could use the verb, we are merging to two tribes. I think that's fine. But you did not make the merge.
No, I don't even think that's fine.
A merge, not the merge. Yeah.
That's like saying you could use the verb merging, you know, if we're like emerging from the water, you know, like, no, words mean something. Words have power.
Yeah.
Just because they're like, you know, denotatively true doesn't mean they like, you know, it's not the merge.
All right. A lot to set up here live here on our week three recap of Australian Survivor covering episodes 6, 7, and 8. And Steven, it would not be a week of Australian Survivor if we didn't have at least one episode where we don't kick somebody off.
This is so they went from two times a week to three times a week. And I think they're just doing that by like cutting the episodes in half. Like this is late. The last episode, episode 8, was basically half an episode.
It was short.
It was short in length, which I did appreciate. It was only 45 minutes, I think. But
still longer than a U.S. Survivor episode.
Yeah, still longer than a full U.S. Survivor. Somehow and the crazy thing about the episode was they really seem to have like drawn it out where like you've gotten like four confessionals from Brooke where she's talking about how she doesn't totally trust Matt. You know, we could do it with one.
Yeah, we could totally be off on this, but I really suspect that the merge episode that this was like the first half of what would have been like a hour and 30 minute episode that we will see the final part of. If the episode 9 is like, you know, 45, 50 minutes in runtime, you know, that's definitely what happened.
I think that's 100% what they're doing. They're like cutting these things in two. They're like, oh, we have so much great content. But you know what? It sticks. Brevity. Brevity is the soul of wit.
Yeah. Not to complain too much, but if this was a U.S. Survivor episode, we would have spent the sequence up until the opening credits on what the attitude was like at the tribes before we went to the challenge with
the swap. You'd have like a few quick, like, oh, I think I'm in control now. And then boom, like, you know, swap.
Whoever is getting voted out in that episode does a confessional about, well, I got everything lined up. Everything is perfect right now. What could go wrong?
And now I think
we
went through all like 18 contestants and we're like, I'm in control. You know, here's why I think I'm in control now, you know, at length. So this was, I'm really enjoying Australian Survivor. I think you got a lot of really fun, great contestants. But this is unacceptable.
Yeah. All right. So let me just set up everything here today. So we have a real fun treat that I said that we're going to be bringing in our Australian listeners to talk about Australian Survivor and give us some perspective on everything today. We're going to have the first of those visits. One of our listeners, Kelly Priest, is going to be here with us today. We're going to bring her in just a little bit after we get through all of the headlines from week 3. Of Australian Survivor. So looking forward to chatting with her. We're also going to get your questions in. hashtag RHAP. Also on our YouTube channel at robisthewebsite.com/YouTube. And Steven, we are but 2 weeks from tonight until the premiere of Survivor Millennials and the Gen Xers. Are you pumped up?
No, no. Normally I'd be so excited, but at that point it's going to be Survivor four nights a week, you know, a blog, multiple podcasts. I don't know. I mean, I can't do it.
Are you blogging the season apart. For Australian People magazine?
Absolutely not. You know, actually, Cynthia Wang, who works at basically Australian People magazine, is doing a great job of that.
So, okay. Good job. Yeah. Good job. All right. So yeah, you are no longer a hungry Jack when it comes to Survivor.
No, I'm a burnt out king.
Okay.
That was a sort of attenuated pun. It didn't really work that well.
All right. Well, let's work backwards through the week a little bit. And let's start with our biggest top story at this hour. We had a merge where the tribes went to a challenge and played for a challenge advantage. They did not know what it was. Steven, from a game element perspective, did you like this twist to the game?
I thought it was fun. I kind of dug it. I mean, it obviously creates one tremendously stacked tribe that's, you know, kind of invincible, and then or has the appearance of being invincible, and then one tribe that's sort of like the dregs left over. I thought it was an interesting twist. You know, I don't think we should do this every time. You know, it gives a lot of power to a few people, but honestly, like, that's Survivor. You know, Survivor is not fair. You can say it's a not fair thing that happened. It's a twist that one tribe won. It's not fair, but like, it's going to be hilarious when that tribe falls apart. You know, you know, there's always on Survivor, you know, it's a very frequent thing after a swap that one tribe is stacked and the other tribe is a mess. And that's really fun to watch, you know, like it's fun to watch like the mess tribe fall apart, or it's fun to watch like the stacked tribe, you know, end up actually falling apart, you know, and seeing what happens afterwards. From my perspective, from a viewer's perspective, I thought it was an interesting way to approach it. Would I want this to happen every time? Absolutely not. I think like that would get old, you know, as a one-off. I thought it was cool. What about you?
Yeah, I thought it was fun. For the life of me, though, I'm struggling to find a scenario where any of the Sinapus want to flip, with the exception of the like, okay, if everybody's like, Nick, you're next, no matter what, you are the next person to be voted off this trip. Hard to come up with a reason why anybody would flip to the other tribe in a mutiny.
Like, if Aganoa had won, it's totally possible Kat could have gone, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, we've done this a couple of times on Survivor where they gave people the chance in Survivor Thailand to switch tribes if they wanted to.
Obviously,
Penner and Candace had that opportunity. They gave you guys an opportunity to switch tribes if you wanted.
Yeah, there was a thing on Exile where, like, if you were allowed to, like, go to the other tribe if you wanted. Obviously, no one did that.
Yeah. So, if somebody was really in hot water, they could have ultimately flipped. But I can't imagine anybody that was going to be not worth voting out immediately would potentially do that. I thought it was interesting, Steven, the order in which they had to decide where they were going. How did that? Was that just like sort of like a coconut chop challenge, like pecking order, where they sort of like revealed the hierarchy in that tribe of who had to, like, obviously Nick is on the bottom. All right, Nick, you're first. You go up.
Yeah. I definitely think they were giving like Nick the chance to like, right, to jump tribes there. And I do agree. It's one of those producer things where like it seems like such a cool thing in theory. Oh my God, what if he makes the call? But realistically, not many people are going to make that choice. It obviously alienates a lot of people on the one side. And then, you know, you're going to another team that you know, could be much more united. Not a great move unless you're really, really in danger. So I didn't love that element. But you liked the pick'em, the way that the pick worked?
Yeah, I think that this was fine. I mean, so often we do the random draw and it works out to be a disaster, where I feel like that this was a little bit of strategy and there was a game element to it. And let's pick people and then let's pick somebody that we want to vote off. And so I thought it worked out, and the teams don't look super lopsided to me.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, you know, I think there's absolutely a chance that it's, you know, anyone could win. And, you know, I mean, it's okay if it's lopsided. Sometimes lopsided tribes, you know, give the best television. You know, it's always fun to watch the hot mess tribe.
What did you think about the draft strategy where they said, okay, let's pick a couple people that'll help us in the challenge? I think that the impulse would be let's just completely decimate the other tribe. Let's take as many of the athletic guys as we can so we won't lose another challenge. Like, let's grab Lee and Rowan.
Yeah.
And whether you want to take Craig or Kate, or basically let's just take all of the athletic people that are on that tribe and let's bring them over here. Whereas it seemed like that they took a couple, but then let's also bring in a couple people that we want to vote out, specifically Jenna Lewis.
Yeah. Well, the other thing too, is that like, once you get the athletic guys in your tribe, you can still vote them out. It's not like either or, you know, like either we pick, you know, we pick the athletic guys and we pick out the girls that we want to vote out. You know, you can still vote out the athletic guys if you lose a challenge. And in fact, that's a great move, right? It's a great move at the swap to take an athletic guy from a different tribe, vote them out when you have the opportunity, you know, so that they don't do any like damage in the immunity challenges at the merge. The real merge. But there's something to the idea of breaking up Craig and Jenna Lewis, which I don't think is a terrible idea, right? I mean, certainly if you're Nick and you have this opportunity to take out one of your nemeses, and you also have the opportunity to kind of like undo this sort of power duo, because realistically, right, like if Jenna Lewis and Craig were still together, if they had taken Rowan, they would be giving the old Vavau tribe as strong a majority on new Vavau as old Sinapu has on new Sinapu. And, you know, taking away Jenna Lewis and breaking that up, you know, both fulfills, you know, both undermines Craig and gives Nick a real shot at vengeance. So
you feel like they gave Nick too much power here. It really seems like that here's Nick. He's at the bottom of new Sinapu. And they really said, okay, well, you want to get revenge on one of the people that screwed you over. So here you go. Here's a little ball of yarn for you to toy with for a couple of days.
I feel like in a lot of these circumstances, it's just the person who's like, you know, when you're making this snap decision, it's all, honestly just the person who's like speaking up and making a convincing argument. Everyone's like, yeah, that, let's do that. And, you know, it looked like, Sinapu had like a few seconds to decide. You know, Nick was probably like, got to break them up. Craig has the idol. Let's grab Jenna. They're like, yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah. That's a plan. You know, I don't think it's necessary. You know, I'm sure if they sat back and deliberated about it, they'd be like, let's be a little more strategic here. Let's not give Nick the power. But I think in that moment, because as we've seen, Nick is very often the one to speak up and make a plan. That's all sometimes as much as it takes.
I thought that Jenna Lewis also played this pretty poorly upon arriving on the, like, it was obvious, like, Nick was he was ready to pounce on this opportunity and how delicious this was, like a Hungry Jack Whopper, Steven.
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought she really did a poor job of sort of trying to heal the potential wounds.
I agree with you there. But, you know, Nick also like made his intentions so clear. And then you see Jenna go and like start chatting with the girls. And one of the things I love about Nick as a TV character is that he has a really great, skill at playing himself into a bad position. And, you know, I thought it was dangerous for him to be going off with her right away, you know. And then, you know, she's coming back and chilling out. You know, he's sort of always like he's always moving, which is why he's such compelling television and also why he's always in hot water.
Yeah, well, Nick, I was really worried about him in episode 7, Steven. I was completely 100% sure that he was going to get voted out on that revote that we ended up getting into.
Me and too. Of course, I was bummed. I was scared. I think he's one of my favorites.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's really, I don't think he has a shot in hell to win this game, but he's been very fun to watch and has been good TV and needs to come back for Australian Survivor All-Stars, Steven.
Yeah, I totally agree.
56 of the best Australian Survivor players.
This time, the game will last 7 years.
Yeah, but with Nick at that tribal council, so they ended up with that he said, okay, we need to flush Kylie's idol that she had shown to everybody, and that was a big concern. And when they went to tribal council, there was a lot of talk about, okay, we got to put either 3 votes on Tegan. And he was really willing to throw Tegan under the bus as well.
Yeah. Although I thought that was fair, right? He knew it's him or Tegan, right? Like you, when in that situation, I was surprised that they didn't vote for, that they really didn't vote for each other. You know, in that situation where you know it's between the two of you, and you know you sort of have this Kylie situation happening. You know, it's pretty amazing that neither, that Tegan didn't vote for Nick and Nick didn't vote for Tegan. You know, I mean, I think it's a very frequent move now where you're like, well, like, it's like Spencer and Shireen in Cambodia. Like, it's one of us. We're obviously voting for each other. We're still BFFs, but, you know, we got to like play for ourselves. I didn't think he was that, you know, I think he tried to save Tegan, but also knew that it was more important to save himself.
Yeah. So we got this 2-2-2 vote split. Steven, just how surprised were you that it wasn't Nick that went home on the revote? Because I felt like once Kylie played her idol,
yeah,
then I felt like, okay, well, that you have all these women that are in this tribe that don't trust Nick. Matt's the only person that does trust him. Then this would be such a power move for the Flick and Brooke tandem. And then ultimately, they decided to keep him around.
I think part of it was his strength and challenges. And, you know, we've talked about this a little bit. You've certainly said in the past how this season of Australian Survivor is a lot, has some sort of reminiscences of sort of classic U.S. Survivor. And one of those things is, I think, a real value for strength, and maybe even disproportionately, like how much that people value challenge strength. And I really think that may have helped seal the deal. And Matt, too. You know, Matt likes Nick. Matt sees Nick's value. I thought Nick made a really good case that he could be a meat shield, too. You know, the fact that Vavao is so focused on him, you know, that's pretty compelling. Why vote out Tegan, who at a whatever variety of merge, you know, she's going to like slip through the cracks, right? No one's going to be like, got to get Tegan out now. But but Nick is a real lightning rod, and keeping him around is a really good idea.
Especially coming on the heels of such a physical challenge that they did in episode 7, which is sort of a variation of the challenge that we've seen. Certainly in Pearl Islands, where Rupert and Austin went tip-top toes, hanging with somebody out in the water. You remember that?
Yeah.
And then Rupert, like, who's like shaking, and he ultimately held on to beat Austin there. This was the tribe version of that. And really, that Sinapu had no shot whatsoever, even with Nick going, you know, 25, 30 minutes to get them started, that all of, you know, the women combined in the challenge. And again, there's a big strength difference between, you know, you got to hold up somebody. I would have lasted about 5 seconds, I think.
I know. I was really impressed with, I mean, me too. Not just, I know that you would have done that. But I do know that too.
So
the other tribes were stacked physically. I mean, there was no way that Vavao was going to, or I'm sorry, Sinapu was going to.
I actually thought that Nick did a much better job than Matt. It seemed like maybe it was the editing. It seemed like Matt was out within like 5-10 minutes.
Yeah, no, I mean, it seemed like Nick held on for 30 minutes, and Matt, you know, the rest of them combined were like 10 minutes. So
it might have been very fresh in their minds of like, look, what chance do we have? And really, in Australian Survivor, I mean, they're sort of like making up the rules as they go along, that at least seemingly to the contestants, that they don't know where we have all these seasons. That like, it takes a lot for U.S. Survivor to legitimately shock us with, we never saw the swap coming on this day, or we never, right. Like, they don't know what's going to go on. They don't know if they're going to get down to... eventually you would think that they're going to get down to two tribes, but you don't know if that's happening at 14, 18, right. 16. So to potentially be that outgunned in the challenges, I think would have been a very frightening proposition.
Right. I think you're absolutely right. That's like the, you know, the scope of the length of time, the amount of people does keep it kind of fresh. Does this argue for changing the number of people on American Survivor?
You think you would like to see 24 people? See, I do think on American Survivor, they would never let there be. I mean, we've had 8 episodes of Australian Survivor, and we had 2 episodes so far where nobody ended up going home at 2 different times. And also then we had 1 episode that didn't have a tribal council, but had a medical evacuation. So we had 3 of the 8 episodes have ended without somebody being voted off in tribal council. And I believe that there's only been, you know, other than a medical evacuation, you know, we're always going to get rid of somebody on American Survivor outside of, according to Mike Bloom, the Suri and Danielle DiLorenzo fire making challenge in Survivor Panama, that Survivor's always getting rid of somebody. And they realize that the audience does not have the patience for an episode where people don't go home.
And I agree with you that like some of that is clearly just their decision to to expand it to three nights a week from two nights a week. And now they've got to like fill time. You know, certainly this one, right. The previous ones were obviously production related. This is editing and marketing related.
Yeah.
But I know. I mean, I don't want to see more, but I do like the fact that it keeps it fresh. I mean, you know, in Survivor Cambodia, we had Emerge at 13. Certainly no one saw that coming. You know, there's little ways to do it, but it's like off by a couple of days. I mean, part of that too is because, you know, I think everyone does sort of expect the unexpected, and you've got to be ready at all times. With all this time, there's no like best practices. And so, yeah, keeping Nick kind of a no brainer, but kind of a most brainer, some brainer. I don't know. A good idea.
Okay. Let's also touch on the episode 6 vote out of Barry. Yeah. Baz is gone, Steven.
It really looked like he fell on his sword, right? Like I kind of got the sense that he, you know, from what we saw in the episode, he like was going to do his own thing and everyone else was like, well, now's the time. But when he spoke at tribal council, he was like, he said something to the effect of, if someone screws up in the challenge, that's the person who should go home. I kind of thought he, you know, maybe he asked to be voted out. What did you think? Did that cross your mind at all?
I really get the sense that Baz's heart may not have been in it. And you're right. It could have entirely been some sort of Jimmy Johnson-esque type thing where it's like, I don't need this aggravation. Again, I have no idea about what how financially well off Barry is in real life and whether he's a very wealthy guy or if he's just somebody that has notoriety, but not, you know, could have probably used the money. I have no idea. He definitely seemed like his heart wasn't really in it. Unless somebody really got under his skin, he was never going to really go to the mat to try to get somebody out of the game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's right. But again, like I think he might've taken a dive, like based on what he said, you know, both his words at tribal council were like, you got to vote out the person who messed up the challenge. And then in his final words, he said something like, well, they had to vote out the person who messed up the challenge. I really felt like he was ready for it and certainly wanted it. And you're right. Regardless of whether or not he was asking them to vote him out, he was certainly not distraught.
But so many red herrings in that episode 6 tribal council.
I know. I like really that. Yeah.
It's like, it seemed like it was pretty obvious it was going to be Barry, a.k.a. Baz. But then they were trying to throw us the, you know, Connor and Sam could be in trouble. Like, why would we vote off one of our own or we've got these guys to get rid of? And then Kate is on the outs and maybe it could be her. And then all of a sudden it started with Andrew is like, I don't trust Craig. I got to get rid of Craig. I'm like a shark. I got to keep moving. I'm coming after Craig. And really, it's just like it was a smorgasbord of potential other targets.
I sort of like that, though. That's how it really is out there. It's like everyone is in play. And I feel like you watch, you know, U.S. Survivor, it's often, is it him or is it him? And that's never the way it really is. You know, it's like it's any of us. And, you know, you've got to always keep moving and scrambling. I kind of like the fact, you know, and granted, you know, that's the downside of the U.S. Survivor having 42 minutes a week is you have to have a very constructed narrative. If you, when you have 16 hours a week, you can do a lot more, you know, interchange. I liked that going into that tribal council, you really saw, oh, now Andrew's going to like drop this little bomb, you know, is it Connor or is Connor going to, you know, going to sneak by? What did you think? What did you think? I mean, just to talk about like how everyone handled that sort of unexpected twist. You know, we had our emergency podcast about the big twist in episode 5,
which was very fun. If you're just watching the YouTube version, you can catch that in our podcast feed at robisatwebsite.com/survivorau.
That was a good one. It was one of my favorites of our podcast ever because we disagreed like about everything.
Good.
Yeah. So Connor and Sam come over to Vavao, and then Nick and Tegan go to Sinapu. How did you feel like everyone sort of dealt with it?
In terms of post-swap?
Yeah, or no, post, whatever we're calling it, post-steal?
Yeah, post the steal. Yeah. You know, it was very interesting to see how Nick was going to try to fit in. That was very fun, I thought, in episode 6. And I wrote in my notes, it was like Shades of Penner back after the mutiny in...
Yeah.
Going back to Survivor Cook Islands 1, where he was like just really like, I'm gonna fish, I'm gonna work my ass off around this camp. So he did a really good job of trying to endear himself, even though it was very transparent. They're like, yeah, well, obviously Nick is working really hard. He really wants to be there. It's one of the things I really like about Nick is how you know, badly he wants to stay in the game and is willing to do anything to do it. But everybody kind of knows that about him, which is also a fun dynamic there. So that was fun. The Connor and Sam stuff, I think, was a little bit less fun. And I had said after episode 5 that I thought that Sam was definitely going to get voted out next. It didn't look like Vival thought about it that way. But I think that that would have been a pretty smart move to, you had the chance to take the shot against Sam. You didn't. You voted out Barry, who was a loose cannon, but at least he was loyal to your side. And now here we are after episode 8, where now Sam is back with his crew at Sinapu.
Yeah, I agree. It seemed like, but on the other hand, you're saying, like, you know, you don't know how long these people are going to be around. You need to keep your challenge beasts. Like, there's always that tension. And was Barry even going to be loyal to his team? You know, like,
well, where was he going? What was he going to do?
He's picking a name out of a hat, you know, once they merge and there's 20 names.
Was he really, though? Was he really picking a name out of that? We never saw the hat. They asked him, they said, do you have paper out here? Like, and he was like, well, oh, yeah, of course I have paper. He didn't have paper. There was no hat.
But he's making the decisions not with his alliance. And to a certain degree, that's, you know, as Nick said, that's more dangerous than anything, is that random factor.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, Steven, let's go ahead. Let's bring in our guest correspondent this week. She is from Melbourne. And let's welcome in Kelly Priest to the show.
Hello.
Kelly,
Hi,
how are
Robert
you?
Steven. I'm great. I'm great. Happy to be on the podcast.
Yeah. Happy to have you.
Yeah. Happy to have you here. And good to finally not only get some Australian perspective on all of this, but a rare appearance of a woman on Survivor Know-It-All. So lots of different perspectives to hear from you.
Rare?
About.
This may be the first ever.
No, Kim Spradlin has been on.
Okay. Yeah. I'm in good company then.
On Survivor Know-It-All. Yes. All right, Kelly, could you tell us a little bit about how Australian Survivor is being received right now and some of the stuff that Steven and I would have no idea about?
Yeah, well, from what I'm seeing, a lot of people are really loving it. I personally have some frustrations with it. I think the more super fans are having frustrations with it, but I'm seeing good reaction. Personally, after the whole swapping tribes situation, I was just like, what is going on? Please vote someone out. But, everyone else just thought it was the most amazing tribal council ever. So, yeah, it's definitely being well received. I don't know. I do think, though, the casuals, if you call them that, my parents, the example, are really just giving up on the 3 episodes at this point, though.
Oh, people are giving up. Now, is the audience that's watching this show, do you feel like have most of them also been watching American Survivor? Because it's hard. Obviously, you know, we have a lot of interactions on the podcast with people that find us who are listening in Australia, but it's hard to really get a sense how popular American Survivor is in Australia.
I think it's a very niche kind of thing where there's all the podcast people that listen to podcasts and watch the show, but the general public, I don't think, watch it much at all. And if they do, it's here and there. So I don't think the people watching this show will be very well versed in American Survivor.
That's interesting. That's very interesting.
How many times would Steven be recognized if he went there?
Probably, I don't know, possibly zero. Possibly zero times.
People might think Josh Groban, right? They might be like, oh, we loved Raise You Up. We loved you on The Voice. I had a question, you know, does the word merge mean something different in Australia?
No, it doesn't. It does not. And I every time I heard someone say merge, I was losing my mind. I was yelling at the computer. I do not know. There's 18 people in the game right now. It's not a merge, you know?
Right. So you still wouldn't date these people?
No, not yet. No, I would. Maybe I would.
You would? Oh, what, is there anybody that you have an eye on? Who is the hunkiest Survivor Australia contestant?
I don't know if I have my eye on anyone, but I mean, Nick is my absolute favorite on the show right now.
Oh, wow.
So I'd say Nick, yes.
I love Nick, too. I love Nick, too. What about Lee? Lee is the hunkiest, isn't he?
Sam?
Sam is the hunkiest.
Every time I look at Lee, I go, wow, like, he is so good looking. And then he opens his mouth and he's just so, it's all about team, you know, and then we spent 5 minutes on his shoes tonight. Like, it's just, I'm not sure. He's a bit bland for me, Lee.
Hey, Steven can speak to how important shoes are on Survivor.
Shoes are incredibly important. I felt so bad for that. I mean, seriously, he's there for another like 30, more than that, right? Like 35 days or something. That's like, he's there for over a month with no shoes on a freaking desert. I mean, who knows what's washing up on the shore? You know, he's got to keep his feet dry. Like, it's terrible. That is a real loss. Like foot health. I've come to know is incredibly important. Yeah.
Okay. Kelly, let's talk a little bit about Kate. And first off, that there was a moment a couple of weeks ago where they talked about how Kate was involved in some sort of famous accident. Obviously, Stephen and I had no idea what they were talking about. Is this some sort of like national story that most Australians know about? What happened to Kate? Is she like a celebrity?
No, I've never heard of it. I asked my family, they've never heard of it. So it's definitely not a famous story. It's an amazing story, but no, it's not a big news story. Maybe it was at the time, but no, not that I'm aware of.
What about Lee and Barry? Are they like, how well known are these guys?
Well, personally, I know nothing about sports. I asked my dad who watches cricket and he has never heard of Lee. So that's pretty reliable. So I don't think
Barry is like an international icon.
I mean, rugby's not that big in Australia, at least not in Melbourne and Victoria where I live, so I don't know anybody that's heard of Barry either. So they're sort of minor personalities, but they're not big, no.
What about Sam? He's like a renowned charity founder.
I've never heard of Sam.
Have you heard of any of these people before?
I have not heard of anyone until I saw them on the show.
Okay. But going back to Kate here, so Kate went through basically some like a surgical procedure on the island back, I believe it was in the 7th episode. It might have been the 6th, though. And we saw that, and Jonathan was even getting involved with it. First off, Stephen, what they did to Kate, did you feel like that? Was that anything different than they would have done on American Survivor? Would they have pulled her from the game? Because obviously we had back in Koh Rong where he had the doctor come out. Dr. Rupert came out and checked out everybody's boils. And it didn't look like that. They didn't do a surgical procedure on Neil on the beach.
No, but sometimes, you know, I think it's maybe a different thing. Like Savage had a big spider bite on his hand that the doctor, I think the doctor drained or someone drained. I don't think this is unusual, right? This seems like fairly... Like, didn't Missy get like crutches or something?
She did.
Yeah. I don't think that's. I didn't think this was anything out of the ordinary.
And now, Kelly, they didn't show a lot of it. Do you feel like that? I thought that the Australian audience was tough. I thought that they could have handled it. I didn't think that the camera needed to cut away as much from the surgical procedure.
I don't want to see.
I'm not sure I could have handled it. I mean, that looked brutal. I couldn't even watch it. The facial expressions and everything just said it all. I couldn't even watch that.
Steven, did you wish they would have shown more of that?
Apparently, they've released the clip. I saw someone link a video, and it said this was the unedited, pus-filled, footage. So if you want it, it's out there. Rob.
Here's what I'm going to do later on tonight, Steven. I'm going to Periscope two girls, one cup style reaction video. Jesus. I'm going to watch the lancing of the boil, and I will be Periscoping my reaction to it.
Oh,
okay?
No. Oh, God.
Yes.
I will not be tuning in for that.
I won't be showing the
video. Oh, okay. Okay. Oh, okay.
I'll have
fine.
The camera turned on my face.
Just on you.
And you'll be watching my reaction to watching that video.
That's amazing.
Okay. All right. So we'll see how that goes. Kelly, how big is Hungry Jack?
It's pretty, I mean, I don't know that a lot of people eat there, but there's a lot of them. It's kind of just like a less good McDonald's.
Less good McDonald's. Is that the tagline?
I suppose. Yeah. I mean,
Steven, Were you excited to see the return of the barrel racing reward from Worlds Apart?
Yeah, well, was that? I don't even think Worlds Apart was supposed to be barrel racing, right? They just they had a barrel.
You're right. It wasn't supposed to be barrel racing, but then they had on that obviously a fan favorite Sierra Dawn Thomas that she did a new strategy, Steven, and she completely changed the game with her strategy. In that challenge.
She changed the game.
That's a fact.
Wow. Yes. And now we're seeing the legacy
The game has been changed.
The game has been changed by Sierra Donna. Now they've brought barrel racing into the show itself.
Yes.
It's the legacy. Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
See?
Yeah. There you go. There you go. But that was a great challenge. I thought that was fun. It's always fun. Yeah.
Steven, I thought this was a pretty good catch. I think I saw this on the Survivor Reddit, but that Nick apparently did a shout out to your good friend, Courtney Yates, following their winning of the Hungry Jack challenge.
Yeah, the something like boo, yay, right? Or rice,
he did boo, rice, yay, burgers.
What was Courtney's? I remember the move. I don't remember what her actual...
I think it was like boo challenges, yay feast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I feel like there's a lot of little Nick callbacks. He's obviously a super fan. I also thought his burger dance was very reminiscent of Mike's Happy Dance. We do the burger dance.
He ripped off the Happy Dance?
I don't know if it's a ripoff. I think that's an homage. I think Nick knows what he's doing. I think he's a big Survivor fan. I actually am Facebook friends with Nick, and I apparently have been Facebook friends with him since 2009 when I was first on the show. So he's been a fan for a long time.
Okay. All right. Well, at this point in time, Steven, do you want to talk about who might be having the best shot to win? Do you have somebody who you feel like is in the best position following the first merge?
Oh, wow. That's who's in it based on we're talking about who's in a good position. Not necessarily who's getting the best edit.
Yes.
Let's see. I mean, obviously, we've got Matt in a good position. We're seeing some danger from him, from Flick and Brooke. You know, Brooke is in a really strong position.
Brooke is in a pretty good spot coming out of the first merge. Obviously, very close with Flick. And Matt, it's difficult to tell if he's in a great spot or if he's been sort of led to the slaughter.
Yeah, I think Matt knows what he's doing. I mean, I really liked Matt's confessional about you know, I didn't want to be in this leadership position. I just happened to be in it. Now I've got to like roll with it. Cause I think that's smart, right? Like he knows, I think like not wanting to be in the leadership position is smart, but also being aware enough of your position in the game to move with your position, but also knowing that it's not necessarily the ideal position. I think his whole attitude towards it was really, really intelligent.
And I feel like that Andrew is somebody that's tough to get a good read on whether or not he's in a good spot or not.
It's hard. We're not seeing a ton from Andrew. I still think Craig's in a great spot. I love Craig. Craig's one of my favorites. I think he had another great quote from Craig was where he was talking about how, he didn't want to say he was in a good position, but he knew the different players in the game and how to use them. I thought that was a really astute quote as well. Craig has just managed to like pluck out an idol. Which again is like, magical. The fact that it went to Craig of all people just by happenstance, right? Like Connor handed him a napkin and the napkin had an idol in it. Totally random, but it goes to the guy you'd want to have having it, right? Like who would you choose to have that idol?
Yeah, that's really fun to see what he's going to be able to do with it. Do you think that there was also a clue in the napkin over at the new Sinapu? Kylie already found an idol?
I thought it was that because of that. I thought it was they've got their idol over there. But there was still that. I think this is the Aganoa idol, right? I think this is that putting that back into the game.
So let's get into taking some of the questions that I have. Of course, we get questions emailed to us at survivorau@robhasawebsite.com. Got a bunch of email questions in from you guys. Plus, Alex is going to be giving us some questions from you guys as we go along. And so this is a interesting question. Okay. Dave Backer says, why did Vavao insist on calling Barry the heart and soul of the tribe when his attitude was seemingly so anti-tribe?
I can't answer that question. It was one of those weird, it was like the same thing they said about Feegs, right? It was that he's the heart and soul of this tribe. I just feel like it's like a condescending way to refer to the old person.
Yeah, it's like that. Boy, that this person is certainly what a team player. What a team player. That's how they have to go.
Yeah,
they have to go. They're just weighing us down.
Yeah.
Let's take some questions.
Who do you think is in the best spot right now? You put the screws to me, but you didn't screw yourself.
Yeah. I want to say it's Matt, but I'm just very wary of him, and I wonder if maybe it could end up being Flick.
I mean, Brooke is in probably a better spot than either of those two, right? Because Brooke is with them. She's got her super tight alliance with Flick. She doesn't have, like, Flick has still got some sort of a target on her back. Matt is a little bit alienated from the girls. I think Matt is probably better capitalized to play his spot than Brooke is. You know, I think Brooke is not that subtle, we've seen. But if you had to just say based on spot, wouldn't you say Brooke over Flick or Matt?
I just think that Flick is the brains of that operation between her and Brooke. So I'll give me the person that has more agency over the person who might be less of a target, but not capable of making the move. So I think that she's in a pretty good spot. And then Phoebe, who, you know, we were so excited about last week, I think she kind of got screwed over here by the swap, especially where it looks like Kat is going to be flipping.
Yeah.
And now she has to put all her eggs back in the Rowan basket.
Do you think Kat is doing the right thing by casting shade at everyone?
If she's somebody that if she makes the second merge, Steven, then she's going to be around for a while.
Yeah.
Like, can't you see Kat at the end of the game just as like the zero vote finalist where people are like, Kat, what did you even do?
Yeah.
Sometimes Kat... I don't even like you.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think that. And Rob, just so that we can know, you know, now that we're in this first merge, how much do you miss Bianca?
Well, she could have been good. She could have been good. We have to do an exit interview with somebody to talk about, like, was Bianca actually good or was she just like sort of like a Phillip-esque figure out there? Okay. All right. So, let's go ahead and bring in a couple of questions. Louise Johnson wants to know, can you give us the number of times that Stephen Fishback rage tweeted after this week's Survivor AU? I didn't get any rage tweets or rage text messages from Stephen this week.
Well, it's all very, because there's so much of this Survivor, you know, it's always very backloaded. Like, I'm watching the episode, like, right up to when we start podcasting. So I don't have much time to rage text, but I would have been rage texting a lot.
Yeah, that I think if this would have been like episode 7 or episode 8 would have been 7, I think then we would have gotten more of an angry Steven. All right.
South Newton 1 wants to know, what main alliance do you think will have more long-term success? Matt Flick Sinapu alliance or Craig's Vivao alliance? That's a good question, Rob.
You know, it's so interesting with these tribes of 9 because you do have the 5 people that are together at the new Sinapu, which is the Matt, Sam, Flick, Brooke, plus, you know, Nick and or Kylie, that group is together, but then you don't really know if any of them could flip, but that seems like the tighter group. Over at Vivao, it's interesting because you're counting on Connor as the 5th vote. All of a sudden, Purple Connor, that he's like the big swing between the 4 people from the Aganoa. And then the 4 people from Vivao.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and certainly Kat as well, though, immediately kind of jump ship.
Yeah. And then she ends up going flipping to the other side. But Connor holds all the cards, and we barely heard from him in this episode.
Connor has some cards. I don't think Connor is as bad. I mean, I think Connor's good at playing his position pretty well. But I don't think he's not as much of a swing vote because Kat flipped so quickly.
All right, let's take another question. And this one is from Ed Morris. Edmo wants to know, should they have voted out Barry in episode 6 or either Connor or Sam instead? I think that they should have gotten rid of Sam in that spot.
But then, but like, you know, you were saying this earlier that. Are we getting an echo? Yes.
Yeah, we have a little bit of an echo on the Kelly connection, but I had to mute her for a little bit, but we'll bring her back at the end.
Okay. You know, you were saying before about Nick, right? Like, you got to hold on to Nick because he's a physical threat. Why isn't the same true of Sam? You know, if you've got to keep your physical power players in this version of Australian Survivor, why not keep Sam too?
Because there are no other physical players that are on the Sinapu tribe where you still have Connor, you still have Barry, you still have Connor, you have Kate, you have, if there's a physical challenge again, who are you running out there?
Right. Sam.
And believe me, it's not like Nick is like the second coming of Ozzy or anything like that either.
No, right. They're just like more lacking for it. I get what you're saying. I'm just saying that it's a marginal decision. I don't think it's that bad. I think that Barry's strategy is very destructive and could be like a real screw up from someone if they don't get rid of him now.
All right.
Get rid of the randomness. That's always the right solution. Get rid of the randomness.
Lori Hopper says, are you catching yourselves developing an Aussie accent or is it just me? Stephen, have you noticed saying anything that in an Australian accent?
I was going to try and I'm not even going to try. I was going to make I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. Here's a question from the emails that came into us. This is from Patrick who says, I've been seeing a slow building winner's edit for Kate, Stephen. Her confessional of positivity before the fire, episode one, her inspirational story. She's being portrayed as the only person on Vavau who didn't turn on Nick, but also isn't a target of the majority. Her medical issue in episode seven, and then she was fine in episode eight. Do you think that Kate is somebody that we could talk about as the winner?
No, I don't.
Anything other than just that you're not feeling it in your gut?
I don't think she's getting that. I mean, I she got that long story, you know, but if she is a well-known figure, you know, no offense, Kelly, that has people know she's got, you know, that sort of story has got to come out at some point. You know, I don't think she's getting that much. She's not really shown as being part of the strategy. Again, this is a different production team. We don't really know how they construct their edits. It might be dramatically different, but I don't think Kate is getting the winner's edit. Oh, okay. Who Dagzek 2 wants to know who will last longer, Jenna or Nick? That's a good question.
Jenna Louise or Nick?
That's a good question.
Boy, it certainly is being set up for Nick to go out before Jenna Louise.
But
isn't
there like a Craig Nick showdown coming? Like, won't we be really denied? If we're denied a Craig Nick showdown, like something is missing from this season.
Well, paint the scenario for me. Do you think that Jenna Louise, that potentially she is going to be able to say to everybody, look, Nick is a snake. What are you guys doing? You're going to keep him around. He's going to screw you guys over. This is such a bad idea. Trust me, Vavau and Sinapu can work together. Sam can vouch for us. We're good people over there. It's Nick. He's a lunatic. He lied to us with the neutral box.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like a lot of it comes down to stuff we don't know. Like what was Sam's perception of Jenna Lewis when he was over there? So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it would be easy. I certainly saw that happening, right? She's like hanging out with the women. You know, we know that the women are already suspicious of Nick. I can easily see her making the case, you know, this guy is devious. Get rid of him now while you've got the shot. Just want that.
Yeah, because she can certainly make the case where it's like, you know, he went to do that thing where he came back and he told us like the biggest lie. It's like, oh, he didn't tell you any of this? He didn't tell you the story about when he came back and lied to us about what the clue was to the idol and how he knows where the idol is over at Vavau? Yeah. Oh, he didn't mention that to you?
Yeah.
But,
so I could see it going either way too, right? But also, you know, Matt obviously has a lot of affection for Nick. You know.
That's it though.
I don't know. Like, who knows? You know, he's
nobody else loves him.
But he's a big challenge player. I mean, he's less relevant now that they have, you know, Sam and Lee.
Merge boot.
Yeah. Haiku Fishback wants to know, with this big of a cast, do you think there will be a merge in just a few votes, or do you think they will get all the way down to 12 or so?
All right. Well, we did our first swap at 18, right? So if you're going to work this out, it does feel like that we could get another merge after two more weeks in this format where six more episodes, Steven, get it down to 12.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And that's a lot, though, to go with, you know, you could do it. You could do
How
it.
About this? Will we see another swap before the next merge?
I think that's possible. I think it is very possible we'll see another swap, especially but based on the way that this swap worked out where it was so determined by one tribe. I think maybe they'll like reverse the effects of that tribe's dominance. What about you?
Do I think that there could be a swap?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do think there could be a swap. Maybe do four boots in this format and then maybe do a little mini swap for two episodes and then have a merge. Steven, I've seen the talking point a little bit on Twitter and social media. People saying too many twists in Australian Survivor. Do you find it to be too twisty?
Oh, no. I mean, I get the idea that you want it to settle a little bit. You know, like, let's let these things play out. I like it. You know, American Survivor certainly does. Like, it's basically every two episodes and then one. I think the fact that this is all compressed within a week impacts that, right? That makes it seem like it's happening a lot faster. But this is about the pace of how American Survivor parcels out their twists.
Yeah. I'm interested to know about whether or not that the people in Australia are thinking this is too twisty. Kelly, have you heard anybody talk about that?
No, I've heard the opposite. I think everyone's like going crazy for the twists, and I've seen a lot of people say that American Survivor should do it. And I think, I mean, you've got so many people, so much going on. I think I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
Even more twists to US Survivor.
More twists. Add in more, every episode a twist. Rob, I wanted to ask you this before I forget. Last podcast we put out, the question, you know, about, and this is maybe a little bit of a callback, but, you know, they had the idol or the rice question, right? Do you take the idol or do you take the rice? And one of the things we were talking about was like, what's the move here? What do you do where you can, you know, somehow keep the trust of your tribe? You can be the person who is selected and not get immediately voted out. Well, we got an email. This is a kind of an interesting solution to this dilemma that said you get the big bag of rice, right? And so you're not taking the idol. You know, inherently people in your tribe are going to not necessarily trust you. You bring the big bag of rice to the next challenge and hold up the big bag of rice. And you say, did the people on your guys' tribes also bring back this big bag of rice? Because if not, they're lying to you and they chose, you know, an idol clue. I thought that was a kind of a smart way to like throw some shade, maybe like create some dissension on the other tribes, prove your own loyalty, you know, prove your own that you did the loyal move. And somehow maybe avoid becoming a target on your tribe, although granted it does, you know, bring negativity from the other tribes at you.
Yeah, it's possible, but you could have people in the other tribe like, what are you talking about? That's the small bag. That's what you say is the big bag? That was the small bag.
Well, but no one's going to have a bigger bag because they would have had to come back with the actual small bag.
It's interesting. Kelly, do you have a take on this?
I think we see time and time again, like we talk about all these great ideas. And I think we saw Nick, do this where he'd obviously thought about the idea of the fake story so much. And I think even like Sophie Clark mentioned that kind of thing, you read the fake idol clue. But I think the simpler, the better, especially in this game, because there's so many players that are so wary of anyone even creating multiple alliances. Because there's not as many strategists in this game, that's what I think it's better to play safe.
Well, so what's the move then in that situation? What would you do?
I would pick the bag of rice. I would pick the big bag of rice and, go honest, because I just think that there's too, like, if the minute Nick came back and seemed a bit sketchy, everyone was straight on top of him. And I do like that he's going all out and he's really like, he's obviously thought about this for so long and he's giving it all he's got and he doesn't want to, you know, think that he could regret not doing something or not making a move that he'd thought about for so long. But I think to be successful, you just, especially in such a long game, you got to keep it simple.
Do you think that there is a different temperament between Australians and Americans that changes the way that they're playing Survivor?
I think possibly. I think definitely. I know there's all this mateship, whatever that's going on. But I think it's more to do with the advancement. Like there's 33 seasons of Survivor in America and players have advanced and it's just advanced so much. Whereas we're coming into this and I think casting also has a lot to do with it. I think Australian TV really likes to cast the heroes and the good guys, which has kind of left the people that really intrinsically know the game and know what to move. Like you've seen like Kate, Barry say, that alliance stuff, and we're kind of sitting here going, that stuff is everything. So I think the main difference is there's a fundamental difference in the way that the majority of players are thinking of in the game. A lot of players are thinking of themselves and their value, not in terms of being trustworthy or being a good alliance member or being a stepping stone for someone else to get further in the game. A lot of them are thinking purely in terms of, all right, I did good in this challenge, so that means that I've moved up a step in my tribe. And a lot of people have a deeper understanding of the game. Like I think a few players do, like Craig, Nick, you know, some of those, but they're not the majority of the players.
Right.
Kelly, I want to ask a bit of a sociological question between the American Survivor contestants and the Australian Survivor contestants. One of the things that I've noticed is that out of the 24 contestants that we have on the show, I don't think we've heard one mention of God or religion or Jesus helping me in this challenge, where I feel like that on any given Survivor season, I feel like you have two or three different contestants where that's a very important part of their lives. As an Australian person watching the American show, do you think, is that a fundamental difference between the two cultures? Are Australian people in general less outwardly religious?
Definitely. I think, yeah, Australian people in general, the majority, well, of people I know personally are non-religious. And yeah, that is something I do notice when I watch the American version, that, yeah, a lot of people are talking about religion, and I don't think that that is such a big thing over here.
Does that mean you guys are all going to hell?
Possibly.
Yeah. But I mean, we, yeah, and religion also, to a lesser degree, politics. I don't think that there's been any discussion, even though we've been seeing more camp life, that I feel like that there hasn't been anybody who talks about, like, oh, my viewpoints on this issue are different than this person. It seems like all of the differences between the people are about things that they're feeling about their game and work ethic more so than any sort of baggage that they're bringing into the game about the way people feel about things.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I know politics is extremely polarizing and everybody has an opinion. Like, it's a big politics is a big discussion over here, which is different to the religion thing. So maybe they're just not showing those kind of discussions. Maybe people are trying to not have those discussions in fear of, you know, getting in conflict. But yeah.
Do you mean racial issues as well, Rob? Like, because that's obviously a big part of, you know, one thing that's exciting about American Survivor, and maybe I haven't noticed this in Australian Survivor, is that people from such dramatically diverse walks of life are forced to work together. And I mean, I guess not even just racially, like, you know, also sociologically, like the nerdy New York Jew and the cattle rancher. Like, there hasn't been that. I haven't gotten that sense from this show yet of, like, look at these people who are so different from each other and they're finding a way to work together.
Yeah, I definitely think that's accurate. The cast is not diverse in my opinion. I come across so many different people just in my daily life from different backgrounds, and that's not really portrayed on the show. Yeah.
I guess Dez, right? We had Dez for a hot minute.
Yeah, that was fun.
He was different. All right, let's do another couple of questions and then we'll wrap it up for week 3. Brian CJW, what is Kylie's plan? She's happy to stick with Blue, even though they tried to vote her out and force her to use her idol.
Yeah, that
she seems like she's basically like the cat of Sinapu, yet she's happy to go along for the ride, Steven. Do you think, is that the smarter move than instead of like saying, oh, Jenna Lewis, I'm so happy you're here. And then also Sam, let me just tell you what, well, Sam is a bad example. He was original Sinapu,
right?
But is that, could she potentially mount a resistance, or is she better off going along for the ride?
I was surprised we didn't get one confessional from her about having had to play her idol. Like, that's kind of annoying that her tribe forced, like, flushed out her idol. Like, that's pretty, like, we didn't even learn at all how she, you know, it's fine. I had the idol. It was putting a target on my back. I was happy to play it. Or like, how dare they? How dare they do that to me? You know, I really want to know where her head's at. Instead, we got like, you know, 14 confessionals from Brooke about Matt.
She's just not a gamer, though. She's just one of these people where it's like, you know, that it's Survivor season one for her. She's just going like, oh, man, this thing has been more trouble than it's worth. I'm going to go ahead and like, she wasn't doing it strategically to show the idol at the previous tribal council. She's like, boy, everybody wants to vote me out because I have this thing. I'm better off without it.
I mean, she probably is better off without it.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see if she, I don't think she's going out the next tribal council they go to. One last question, Steven, from Eddie.
All right. Eddie wants to know, is it better in a 55-day season to be a low key floater? Do big characters have a chance? It's a good question, Rob.
Yeah. I don't think a big character strategically does have a chance in a 55-day game. I think that eventually you are going to be outed in a game as long as this. I think you can be a big character socially, but I think that the harder you play this game, the more of a chance that you will have to be exposed. I mean, we are only about a third of the way through here. And I mean, can you imagine Nick somehow lasting another, you know, 35 days in this game?
I know, he's going to burn out. I mean, I love watching Nick because he's got so much energy and so much joy and so much, you know, he loves being the villain. And then he's like, oh my God, now I'm on the bottom. It's great. It's great. I hope so. I hope we see a lot more Nick. Wait, one more question, Rob. Romanest has kind of a related follow-up. If Andrew successfully blindsided Craig this early, would it even be a good move for his game?
I don't think so. I think that Vival,
I don't think so.
They need
either.
To stick together with their numbers. I mean, unless he was going to just somehow do this as part of jumping ship to work with Aginoa, and, you know, where he was going to foster something long term and start working with Phoebe and Rowan, and he felt like he really was on good terms with them. But at this point in time, it looks like Kat is ready to flip over and go against her tribe. I feel like that Rowan is the next person to go out. So why would he go away from what's working at Vival?
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. It would be a big mistake.
Okay.
But people get restless.
People get restless. It's a long game. And I think that
it's a long game. Yeah.
The harder you play, the more chance you have to be exposed in 55 days. Kelly, is there anything that you want to see that Australian Survivor do over the course of the next 2/3 of the season?
I mean, I'd like to see more tribal councils, but I
where people go home too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I really like to see the strategy advance a bit more, and I hope that the players, as they move along and get towards the end of the game, will sort of gain that understanding. And I think Brooke, actually, I've sort of seen over the past few episodes, is I doubt she's watched the show before, but I think she has that social thing, and I've seen her sort of start to have more intelligent confessionals and really start to develop more of an understanding of the game. So that's what I really want to see, is more strategy, higher level strategy, because I think that with the progression of the game, we could see that.
Steven, that we were talking about this with Kelly. Do you have an Australian Survivor crush?
It may be Nick. I mean, I like Craig a lot too. They may be my crushes. I mean, you know, I still have a soft spot for Connor. There's so many. Magic Matt is great.
Only the men.
Well, I like Kylie a lot. Elle's good. You know, she's doing some good stuff. Who's strategic among the women? You got Flick.
What about Phoebe? You out on Phoebe already?
I'm not loving Phoebe right now.
She survived the loss of Rowan.
I don't know. I was all in on Phoebe a couple weeks ago, and now she's kind of I don't know. She's doing a good job though, right?
Yeah, she's doing a good job. I think that Kat's defection could be a deal breaker for her.
But Phoebe is good because she's good at giving people what they want. I thought when Phoebe was working Christy, I thought that was really well done. You know, when Christy came over to her and was like, where are we? Is it you and me? And Phoebe wasn't like, yeah, of course. You know, she was like, well, what do you think? Can we do this? Phoebe really engaged with it. And I think that's really the sign of someone who's playing well, is when they will engage with everyone and really make that person feel like you're coming to a decision together. So yeah, I guess I'm still in on Phoebe. We just seen a lot less of her.
Yeah. She had a little bit before the swap ultimately happened. And we got to see her trying to work with a couple different people, with Christy, and trying to get something going, but we'll see ultimately where it goes. All right. So 3+ hours more of Australian Survivor just around the corner. We'll be back to talk about it again next week. Probably what, Tuesday night? Go back to Tuesday, Steven?
Maybe.
This is tough to squeeze it in before the Big Brother, but we'll see what we can do. We'll keep you posted on all that. Kelly, it was so nice to get
Tuesday,
to talk to you.
Yes, Tuesday.
Thanks for having me. Yes. And also, have you seen the Hungry Jack's fan favorite leaderboard?
Oh no! Who is the Hungry Jack's fan favorite?
This is what you're
favorite?
Here for, Kelly. Don't slip this. That in.
So surprisingly, at 37%, Andrew is the fan favorite. Connor is second at 12%.
Andrew?
Yeah.
What did he
That's
do?
That's amazing.
I don't know, but he came out and started doing a bit of strategizing. But
I like Andrew. Andrew's good. I support that.
Yeah. So here's what. Yeah. So I brought it up. So the fan favorite leaderboard. Boy, it might be that this could be like an opposite worlds type thing where maybe nobody is voting for it, and Andrew maybe is like campaigning for the fan favorite leaderboard.
You don't know. It's so, you don't
Steven,
know.
The let me just give you the poll numbers here.
Yeah.
Andrew is in first at 37%, with Connor coming in second at 12%, and Lee in third place at 7%. How could Andrew be that far? I get it if people like Andrew, but basically he wasn't even in episodes 7 and 8. He was in the Vival Tribal Council episode where he's talking about maybe we should get rid of Craig. Maybe. okay, let's stick, get rid of Barry. I mean, he has probably been, of the 18 players left in the game, he's probably like 10th in airtime. So
yeah, he's got a small, Andrew's under edited.
Yeah. It's bizarre. And then we have a number of survivors tied at 1% at the bottom of the fan favorite leaderboard.
That definitely sounds like it's not a lot of votes coming in.
Yeah. You know, it doesn't say.
If number three is at 7%.
Yeah, it doesn't say how many votes that's out of. Okay. What does the fan favorite leaderboard winner get, Kelly? Do you know? Do they get a lifetime supply of Hungry Jack?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know that there's a reward for that, but I don't know.
Maybe, and number two just gets a mini Whopper.
A junior Whopper.
Whopper Junior. Yeah.
Oh, that's good. All right. Very fun stuff. All right. What's the hashtag today?
Oh, God. Kelly, what's the hashtag?
Oh God. God, I've got someone.
All right. Chat room, you figure it out while we give you what's coming up. Of course, we'll have much more Big Brother to come Wednesday night and Thursday night. Steven has the DVR set for that, the final 2 weeks of Big Brother. And of course, heading into the kickoff of the Survivor Millennials and the Gen Xers here on RHAP. Plus much more to come in terms of our previewing of the new season. Still a couple more preview shows to do here on the podcast. And of course, if you don't have your tickets yet, you're not going to be able to get them for much longer to come out and see Stephen and I in person at the regular Survivor Know-It-Alls, October 26th.
The hashtag should be something about a merge versus a swap, right?
Effing swap. Is that what you want to call
effing
it?
Effing swap. Let's go with that. And I just got a tweet from C. Lamperls that you need to know this. Andrew has bots to vote for him on many fan polls. So apparently Andrew has mobilized the robot. So kudos to him.
Let's put asterisk that. And that
this is internet rumor, speculative internet rumor. But I don't think there's anything wrong with, if you've got the robots on your side, you're doing well.
Okay. All right. So, we will see about that again. Kelly, where can people find you on Twitter?
At Twitter, I'm at Kelly__priest. Double underscore, yep.
I've never seen that before, Stephen.
Why the double underscore?
Because underscore was already taken. I was late to Twitter. And at Instagram, I'm just at Kelly Priest.
Okay, I see that's good. All right, so I'm going to, hold on. Is this you that from Birmingham, England?
No,
she's from Melbourne, Australia.
I know, that's why I thought that. So what? Say it again. So it's Kelly.
I'm there. I managed to do
Kelly
this.
Kelly _ priest.
Yes.
P-R-I-E-S-T.
Yeah.
Is how you spell priest.
P-R-I-E-S-T. Okay.
You must have been writing P-R-E-E-S-T.
Maybe. You know what? I think I went with one underscore.
She just clarified his double underscore.
All right. Well, that Steven, relax. Okay. That sometimes
you
type it in
grammar and spelling, this is my one thing.
You type it into Twitter and sometimes it's showing you things that are, it's giving you like, it's like you type it into Google and then you get like the results from things. And that's what, it brought up. I didn't go directly there.
Didn't go direct.
Yeah. Okay. Indirect flight. Kelly, what's been the sentiment among the Australians for Stephen and I to come and do a live show covering Australian Survivor in Australia?
I mean, I think you'll have to ask a fan who's a bit more connected to the Survivor community. I mean, none of my friends watch Survivor, so I don't really get to talk to them about it. But I personally really want, I want you to come down to Australia, and I'm sure a lot of the other Australian fans definitely want that.
Okay. All right.
$30,000 is all we need. One fan, one ticket to the
start a Kickstarter, and I'm sure that you will get that money.
Let's see. Maybe Barry has some connections. All right. All right. Great stuff. Thanks so much to Alex Kidwell behind the scenes for pulling the questions. Of course, Scott St. Pierre for editing the Australian Survivor Know-It-Alls podcast. Much more to do. Johnny Mack on the Big Brother show tonight. Should be a lot of fun. Steven, anything else?
Now, this was good. This was good.
Follow Steven on Twitter at Steven Fishback. And of course, you can send us your emails all week long as you watch the episodes. Just please don't spoil the episodes in the subject line. SurvivorAU at robisawebsite.com, and you can subscribe to our Survivor Australia podcast feed. Go to robisawebsite.com/SurvivorAU. Take care, everybody. Bye. Survivor, no, it owes.